You can ask some questions now. Okay. Wait, there's one question already. Can I answer this first? Where does the ignorance comes from? That's the first question. When we talk about first, ignorance first come from, you are talking about evolution, isn't it? You are now asking a genesis, question of genesis. In the beginning, the God created hamburger. You know, that kind of thing. Isn't that what you are talking? Yeah. Well, the genesis is one subject that if you want to know more, should read Nagarjuna or Chandrakirti. They don't believe in genesis. There is no such thing as in the beginning. Therefore, ignorance, if you are asking the first ignorance, there is no such thing. Ignorance is again a relative entity. Did I answer your question? Okay. Enlightenment, basically you want to know what is enlightenment. As I said, enlightenment is an absence of paranoia. Okay, I will tell you. Okay, we have so many obsessions. Yeah, obsessions. Certain impulse obsessions too. You understand? Obsessions. Obsessions coming from our own habitual tendency that is coming from a past life, or obsession taught by our mother, father, grandparents, or obsession that is taught by the great Confucius master, obsession that is coming from our culture, all of these. And these obsessions really binds you, makes your life limited. I'll give you one example. Okay, maybe you are the very right, very person. I don't know, think, I'm giving you an example. You know, sometimes when we go to bed, some people have this obsession that they have to put their shoes in order right next to the bed. Really right in order, facing to the door, not to the bed. They go to sleep, they wonder, did I put my shoes right? You know, maybe not. You check. You look at the shoes, yeah, it's facing the door. It's right in order, it's not upside down. And then you sleep. Half an hour, was that my dream? Or did I really put it? You get up and check. I'm just giving you a very extreme example, but if you think all our life is a bit like that, our life, there's so much obsession, like parents' obsession that a kid must study this. Husband's obsession that wife must do this and that. Wife's obsession of husband must do this and that. You understand? We have a certain rules we make and expect the other people to perform. That's what we call obsession. As you practice the Dharma, you practice and practice and practice. One day, you kick out your right foot with the shoes. The shoes landed on your maybe shrine, on the top of the shrine. I don't know. Left shoes goes right through the bathroom and sink into the toilet. You still sleep. Nothing. You don't care a bit where it went. That's enlightenment. No more obsessions, no more clinging. Couldn't There's a short form of that. You know, in America we call it CCL. Couldn't care less. Yeah. You have to reach to that end. CCL is the American version of enlightenment. Couldn't care less. But this it's but then again it is accompanied with compassion though. Not only you have CCL, you actually want other people to have CCL. Yeah. That's important. Yeah. Yes. All same. Vajrayana's vow. Vajrayana is a path. Path. You know? Path. And the path, Maitreya. Maitreya said, Pangchir Hui Chachin Chir. A path has to be abandoned. Path is like a boat. You go to the other shore, use the boat, you reach the other shore. What do? You abandon the boat. You don't stand on the boat because the boat looks beautiful. Because otherwise you are not on the other shore. Yes, the boat looks beautiful, boat is so smooth, boat is so, and you had the best time with this boat. But your aim is to reach the other shore. Likewise, when you reach the Buddhahood, all, not only the Vajrayana, all the other yanas are gone. Has to be. Okay? Oh, but karma is a perception. It is. That's a good question. Karma is basically cause, condition, and effect. And all of that is a perception. When perception happens when there is a mind perceiving it. Okay?
Rinpoche, I want to ask you, in Buddhism there's this contemplation of four thoughts. So can you explain like how do we contemplate on those?
Four immeasurable thoughts?
No, the like four thoughts, like impermanence, precious human birth.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. I forgot, somebody has to remind me this one. Yes, impermanence, you think that everything is impermanent?
I mean like, what do you mean by contemplate? Do we like sit there and keep thinking?
Yes.
It's like, don't know how to do it, you know.
Okay. You can do it many ways. You can do sitting, and it's more like analytical. You sit and watch a thought, okay? And in your thought comes a beach, a beautiful beach. You understand? And then you just watch that beach. And then, because of that beach, it reminds you California. Because 20 years ago, you have been to California and you saw a beach. Okay? Then your mind is now in California. And then, because it's in California, now you are thinking about Hollywood. And then you think about some actors. You understand? So within one sitting, your mind travels from one continent to another continent, one life to another life. You understand? This alone proves that mind is changing all the time. Yeah? That's one way. You breathe out, you breathe in. When you are breathing in, you are a step closer to the death. You are a step closer to decay. You are a step closer to old age. Stuff like that. But, I have to tell you something. Impermanence is not necessarily something like a bad news. I think this is what many people think. The Buddhist meditation on impermanence is always something pessimistic. It's not true. Do you have a Ferrari? Ferrari. You don't? You might have it tomorrow, all because of it's impermanent. You understand? See, today you don't have a Ferrari. You understand? And usually people, not knowing the essence of impermanent, they think, oh, I have no Ferrari. How pathetic I am. They feel sorry for themselves. But someone who knows a little bit about impermanence, they think, well, we never know. I might end up with 6 Ferrari tomorrow. And this could happen. So impermanent is also very good news. Really good news. It's just the reality, it's the fact of life. It changes all the time. That is only if you want Ferrari. I forgot an example for the perception. Perception is also like an idea. Okay? You read modern magazine, and these magazines, it says, Rolls-Royce is good car. Now, you have an idea that Rolls-Royce is good. The best. Now, the Rolls-Royce perception is invading your life. You work for Rolls-Royce. You work so hard, spending every saving to buy a Rolls-Royce. And maybe even manage to buy one. And when you drive Rolls-Royce, constant paranoia that it might get bumped, scratched. And by the time you have finished buying a Rolls-Royce, there's a new model. A sharper, sleeker, faster Rolls-Royce. This is how perception works. You can read Cosmopolitan magazine, and then it says, 2004, how our legs should look like. You know, legs, yeah. Shape of the legs. And then, goodness, millions. While in Africa they have nothing to eat, the millions and millions of others eat less so that they have these legs. And plastic surgery, all of that. All because of a perception. Not because of a Cosmopolitan magazine. Yeah, it's all a perception. It changes. I mean, during, what is it? Tang Dynasty, is it? Tang. I think a fat, sort of more plum is considered beautiful. And I don't know which dynasty, a small feet. I heard that the women try so hard to make their feet so small so that the men likes it, right? It's the same thing, still it's the same thing. You know, we might laugh at those, you know, ancient time, uncivilized, you understand? Those were the days that's unenlightened, uneducated, uncivilized, but it's not true. Same thing. During the Tang Dynasty, maybe the women are binding their feet so that the feet look small. Nowadays, millions of people are starving because they want a richer, perfect hips or legs. It's always like that. It's all ruled by perception. And that's what we need to change here. The Virupa, you know, the great saint Virupa, he's so up to date. This is a teaching not taught only during the Nalanda's days, you understand? This is a teaching taught for now. Year 2004, it works. 2010, it will work. 3004, it will work. Any More questions?
Yeah.
Regarding the offering to the super giant and the guru, if we perceive it in a pure way, then we are offering to practice our six confessions. Either we are offering to wrong motivation. Six initially is the wrong motivation overrides the pure motivation.
I think, yes, it depends with the strength of the motivation. If you begin your practice, even making offering, with a refuge and a bodhicitta, usually all the deed should be very powerful. That's why there's always a refuge and bodhicitta right at the beginning. You know, you take refuge and then you say, I will do such and such so that it will benefit this and that. And then to make it even better, at the end you dedicate the merit. So that should really take care of your merit.
Rinpoche, I've got three more questions to ask you. First is, if we get an empowerment, is it all the three yana vows, we get all of them? And then the second question is...
Three yana vows, when we receive the initiation?
Yeah.
Yes. Most of the time, every time we receive initiation, abhisheka, you always have to have refuge, definitely. Okay? You have to have refuge. And bodhicitta also. Without the refuge and the bodhicitta, there's no ground for abhisheka. And then you receive the tantric vow, but it depends. If you are receiving the Kriya Tantra, you don't receive the full Buddha family vows. Sometimes you only receive Ratna family or Vajra family only. But let's say if you are receiving Hey Vajra in Abhisheka, then you receive everything, the whole Buddha family.
Then that means for lay follower, that means the five precepts also receive.
Yes.
And the Bodhisattva was that those are
yes.
18.
Yes, good. But I don't know. I think, but you see, when you are the receiver of the three vows, you have to emphasize the Vajrayana vow as the main one, and then the Mahayana, and then the Pratimoksha. You got it?
But then do we go for a separate ceremony to get the five precepts, the lay five precepts?
You can.
That means when we get the empowerment, the main focus is on the tantric vows.
Yes, main focus is on the tantric vow.
But if we break the lay precepts, like the Pratimoksha vow, is the same, the result will be the same as we break.
If you break the Pratimoksha vow, as a Vajrayana practitioner, that does not necessarily mean you are breaking the Mahayana, Bodhisattva vow, and the Tantric vow. But having said that, there is almost no independent Pratimoksha vow once you are a Tantric practitioner. There's almost none. What are you talking about? Give me an example.
Okay, for example, we get in Sakya, there's a Vajrayana initiation, right? Mm. So last time when His Holiness Sakya Junjin gave, he said there's a five precepts. Mm. So in five precepts...
Maybe you should put it this way, okay. Let's say you have become a monk, okay? You're taking the full ordination, and if you are quite serious about it, then as a bhikshu, you should not be eating from the midday onwards, right? Okay. Now you have taken a Buddhist tantric abhisheka. In the tantric abhisheka, you have taken the Mahayana and the tantric vow. So, one day, somebody comes and say, please have some dinner. This will make 200 people happy. 200 people are going to listen to you and they will take a Bodhisattva vow from you. They will engage themselves into the holy path of the Dharma. Now what will you do? Should you stick with the pratimoksha vow and refuse the dinner? Right. So at that time you override the Mahayana vow. You override the pratimoksha vow by the Mahayana vow. That's how you do it. Okay? And similarly, is this the... Am I answering your question?
Partially, but that is a very good circumstances where you can benefit others. But say, let's say I get all the three vows. I get the initiation, I get all the three vows. And then I go and steal, or I kill a human being. So I think I will break the pratimoksha vow, right? In this case.
Let's say you do what?
I steal or I kill a human being.
Yes.
Then I will break the pratimoksha vow, right?
Pratimoksha vow, yes. Yes, okay. When you steal, okay, we have to define this. Okay, you kill a person out of your own desire, anger, and ignorance. Okay, of course, definitely. But like the Bodhisattva, if you are supposed to kill this person so that you are stopping him, the victim, to engage into such a hideous bad karma. Yes, you still break the pratimoksha vow. You break the pratimoksha vow, but you gain the merit. So these three vows, you have to study something called Damsum. This is something that's where it's wrong. Okay. Did you want to ask some questions? Okay. Working with the perception. Rather than an event. Yes. Yeah. Yes. But you see, Siddhartha managed to overcome all the obsessions. That's why it became an event. Enlightenment is a choice. Oh, yes, of course. But we don't choose. Do we? That's the whole thing. That's what we call practice of the Dharma, trying to make a choice. How to make a choice? Oh, everything. Meditate, hear, contemplate, all of that. It's all this so-called Dhamma practice is how to choose. It's basically art of choosing. Of course. But that's difficult because there's so much temptation. It's like, you know smoking is bad. You have heard the doctors say that smoking creates cancer, that, this. But the moment you look at the slim, white, what do you call it? Cigarette, and the lighter, and the whole procedure of smoking, holding it in between two fingers, all of this is tempting. Very tempting.
All those humans, goals, arise out of our interior perception and out of our desires. Then why are certain Buddhism doing so much teachers clear all those offer to them? What are we accusing them? Are we accusing ourselves?
Yes. Well, the rituals are like they are also perceptions. Really. It's like if you have a thorn inside your palm, you need another thorn to take it out. So, ghosts. Okay, now, before answering this question, I have to clarify something. You said if ghost and what? Demons are just a perception. You said that. Now that just word, that just, is something that I have to clarify. Because when you say it's just a perception, then you are devaluing the perception. You think, oh, it's just a perception. Right? It's just a perception. But yeah, but I have to correct you, because first of all, there is no other than a perception. You know, when you say it's just a perception, then you are indicating, okay, this is just a perception, but this is real. But in Buddhism, everything is a perception. Okay? One. Second, you, when you say it's just a perception, as I was saying, you seem to be sort of putting down the perception as if it is not that important or it's not that powerful. Now this, you are wrong. Perceptions are very powerful. Remember the legs, Rolls Royce? They are all perception. They are as, in fact, they are worse than the ghost. You understand? At least the ghost Tibetan lamas can chase. But the legs, oh, really difficult. Very difficult. Very difficult. But, as Buddha said, okay, this might shock you, shock many of you. I think Buddhism, the whole Dharma practice, is a placebo. You know placebo? Placebo. You know placebo? Yeah. Placebo is a pill. It's a fake. It's not a medicine. Sometimes you give it to someone saying that this will work. And they eat and they think it works. Whole Buddhism is that. And Buddha said so. It's not as if I'm making it up, actually. Buddha said that. The path. It's a deception, but it's a necessary deception. It's a necessary deception. Let's say you and I are in the desert. You are very thirsty. Everywhere you look, you see mirage, and you think this is a water. And you said you really want to go to this water. Now, I have been to the desert, and I know you are hallucinating. Now, I can be very unskilled, a little bit of compassion, but no skillful means, no wisdom. And then I can tell you, hey, you shut up. You know, this is not a water, this is a mirage. You just, you know, that's not going to help you. You understand? So if I'm a compassionate, skillful, then I might say, yes. Even though knowing that this is not true, because I know you, I know that you will not hear me saying this is not water, I will have to say, yeah, let's go. I might even go with you. And as we get closer, you yourself will see it's a fake. And this is what we call skillful means of the Buddha. There's thousands of that. How many? 84,000 placebos. Yes, yes, yes. Because why not? Actually, why not? Placebo, why not? Placebo always cures much more than the real medicine, I heard. What do you mean by real medicine? You mean truly existing? I dare say Buddha Dhamma is a trick. It is a trick, definitely. It is a trick. Do you know? And it's a wonderful trick. It's an amazing, compassionate, full of wisdom trick. I'll tell you something. Do you know? If he could have just said, "Hey, guys, you are Buddha." That's all he needed to say. But does it work? That doesn't do anything. We have the Buddha nature. All he has to say is, "Hey, you are Buddha." That's all he needed to say. But simplicity is not something that we are used to. We need complication. That's why he said 84,000 teachings, 100,000 prostrations, mandala offerings, incense, lamps, Tibetan rituals, bell, damaru, all kinds of complications. And we love it. We love it. We love it.
Rinpoche.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, nowadays, because when we follow a guru, we need to check him like for 3 years. That's traditionally the approach.
3 years.
Yeah. But now we I think most people don't do that. No? So, and then the essence of Vajrayana is pure perception, and that starts from the guru. We have to see the guru as pure. And that's, mm-hmm. I think that's been one of the requirement for being yes. a qualified Vajrayana student. So, but then if we follow a guru without checking, then sometimes, no, we might think this is, he did something that
no.
we don't think so. So
checking is important. That's why you have to study first. You should always study. Tasam gomsum, we call it. You should hear, you should contemplate, and you should really study. And then you should check. But keep in mind, when you check the guru, this critical mind is not other than your own mind. You are not bringing a sober mind to check. It's your mind doing it. So what I'm saying is you have to have a little bit of a balance here, because you can check and check and check for next 500 lifetimes, and it does not mean that you will not find a fault one day. As long as you have an impure perception, you will always find one, right? But when you check, keep this in mind, like Gangzala Mithun Chulatun, Dangdenla Mithun Ngedenotun, all this, do not depend on a person, but depend on his teachings. Like, it doesn't matter whether he uses forks or chopsticks when he eats noodle. That shouldn't matter. But it does matter whether he is teaching you emptiness or soul. You understand? It's really important. I'm serious. Some people choose guru just because they use chopsticks over the water fork. Because, no, people do that because you can relate. That's how we do. You know, we love our guru to have a similar quality like us. We love anchovy pizza. And if our guru likes, oh good, it's a bit like choosing wife, actually. You have to have a common, what do you call it? Something common to share with. It's a relationship. It's really a big build-up of a relationship. A relationship is always so complicated. Do you know why? Because we like our partner to have something in common with oneself. Beethoven, I don't know, Mozart, jazz, I don't know, Jennifer Lopez, I don't know, something to talk about, right? But we also want our partner to be slightly special, because if he or she is completely like you, boring. So human mind is so complicated. So it's a bit like guru, you know. Guru is the same. We like our guru to be human. I mean, imagine you have a guru whenever you invite to a restaurant for a lunch, he flies in. Sits on the table, looks at the food, sucks in all the, food instantly. Well, if you have some superstitious ridden friends, they might get impressed, but your normal friends, I don't think they will have a good time with. You understand? You don't like to have this superhuman quality at all the time. It's human mind is so complicated. We like our guru to be human, but at the same time slightly superhuman. Not too superhuman. So bear all this in mind and then analyze. What you need is the path to enlightenment. Is he going to give you this or not? Does he have this or not? And most of all, is he or she interested in your enlightenment? That is so important. Because, especially if you are a Vajrayana practitioner, basically, looking for a guru means looking for someone to destroy you. You are basically hiring someone to destroy you. You are giving him the payment of body, speech and mind and quality and activity and all your belongings and everything so that he is going to destroy you. Guru is someone who you don't negotiate. No negotiations. No discussions. No negotiations. No compromise. Nothing. No scheduling. No... Basically, almost all the questions that begins with WH has to be abandoned. Why, what, when, who, all of that. It's difficult. Very difficult. But if you want a quick enlightenment, it's a necessary. It's not necessary for everyone. If you're a Mahayana or a Shravakayana practitioners, guru devotion, like as Vajrayana talks, not necessary. You don't need this burden of guru. Really, it's a burden. Why would you like to have someone to destroy you? No need. I don't know whether they have one.
Rinpoche, when we do confession, right, there is four powers that we need, right? The one is not to repeat the bad karma again. So we got to tell Vajrasattva, I promise not to repeat again, but I know tomorrow I will do it again. Mm-hmm. So sometimes difficult to yes. Convince myself that I'm doing it sincerely. You know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I should tell you something about that. First of all, this makes a big difference between the Buddhist confession and other religious confession. In Buddhism, confession is basically exposing the ego. Ego. Ego is always resting in its hideout. You take it out. You expose it. That's the essence of the confession. You understand? For that, you see, normally the confession, I think many religions, the confession works like this. You do something bad, every week you go to a confession place, you confess, then you are all right. Such kind of mentality suits very well with the ego. What does ego want? Comfort, isn't it? Sometimes ego feels a little guilty because it has been bad boy. So it needs some boxes to go and say, hey, I have done this and that. And then somebody from the behind say, oh yeah, okay, fine, now that you have. You understand? But whereas in Buddhism, once and for all, you have to destroy the ego. And this is why there's that pledge of not doing. Of course, as you said, it's difficult, but that is the determination and the motivation you have to have. As long as you have that motivation and determination, even though we know that we will end up doing it, the deed will be much weaker. So keep on doing it.
The power, the last power, the power of the universe, the currency that there's no sin to confess, there's no requirement to be overcome.
Pardon?
The love. The love. Power.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly, exactly. Yeah, no ego. Awesome. Of course. Ego is already kicked out, and it, in its place, a white guy holding a vajra and a bell, who calls himself Vajrasattva, sits. It's different. If your perception does not invite more jealousy, more pride, more anger, then you are becoming normal. Yeah. If your perception is not bringing you more trouble, that is. Both. Okay. So I think that's the impure perception today. Tomorrow we will discuss experiential perception, where having impure perception, now what do? We try to get in touch. We try to manipulate this impure perception with a yogic method. And that's what we are going to do, what we are going to talk tomorrow. And then, as I said, the pure perception is beyond, maybe not beyond you, but it's definitely beyond me. But we can intellectually talk a little bit. Pure perception, it's supposedly the how an enlightened being look at things. That's what am I supposed to talk? What kind of perception does enlightened being have? Very difficult to talk. I can only give you some example, like an enlightened being will never enjoy a detective movie. Do you know why? Because the whole reason why you enjoy a suspense thriller is you don't know what's happening until the end. That's why you watch. Yeah. Okay.